It's going all right.
Just like the suit that I got in
home. Yeah. Color coordinator?
Yeah.
Okay.
I could go around with you wherever you go.
We'll be a couple. We'll be a couple. Yeah. We'll be a team.
Good morning. The Portland City Council will
now is that very, very first? Good morning. Today is Wednesday, May 5th. Happy Cinco de Mayo. It is 9:30 a.m. and the Portland City Council will come to order. Good morning, Sue. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. What do you think of the weather?
Improving every moment.
Let's hope it continues. Can you please call the roll?
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard. Fritz.
Here.
Adams.
Here. Quorum is present, so we can continue. We have a special dispensation this morning. Commissioner Amanda Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. Good morning. I have a proclamation to read. Whereas National Women's Health Week was initiated by a coalition of public and private organizations dedicated to raising awareness of women's health issues, whereas from that day forward, National Women's Health Week has occurred in the spring with an annual celebration held the week following Mother's Day. Whereas National Women's Health Week is a celebration of women taking responsibility for their own health through greater knowledge and understanding, where National Women's Health Week celebrates the efforts of national and community organizations working with partners and volunteers to improve awareness of key women's health issues, whereas of Oregon's 1.9 million women, over 20% have not received a pap smear or a routine checkup in the last 3 years, and the need to educate women on the importance of preventative screenings is urgent. Whereas nationwide, preventable deaths account for 32% of deaths for women and only 23% of deaths for men. Whereas according to the Global Gender Gap Report of 2009, published by the World Economic Forum, in the area of health and survival, the U.S. was ranked 40 out of 134 countries in providing gender equitable health care. Whereas the City of Portland has chosen to launch our local community outreach by providing women's health education workshops for women living outside. Now, therefore, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, hereby proclaims the week of Sunday, May 9th through Saturday, May 15th, 2010, to be National Women's Health Week in Portland and urges all citizens to participate in the activities planned hereforth.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. We'll now move to communications. We have five signed up. Sue, can you please read title for item number 602?
Request of Charles E. Long to address council regarding new developments concerning police reform.
Welcome back, Mr. Long. I hope you're doing well.
My name is Charles Long. Although there has been much discussion concerning police reform since Chief Mark Croker, nothing has been mentioned regarding the role of the police chaplain in this equation. I bring this up because of recent displays of road rage by two prominent police officers. The duty of the chaplain is to deal with the emotional and psychological stress inherent with police work, stresses that affect not only the officers' personal and family lives, but also the way they react with the public they serve. Oregonian columnist Andy Parker reported February 22nd that police officers are four times more likely to be involved in domestic violence than the general public. He quoted former police chief Penny Harrington as saying, quote, "From my experience, it's still hidden away," unquote. Is a police commissioner aware of the importance of the police chaplain and whether he is performing his job effectively. I never heard his name mentioned. Former Chaplain Ed Stell, I understand, is now serving with the Multnomah County Sheriff's Department. The Albina Ministerial Alliance has recently published its 5-point program for police reform. One of its goals is to change the state law to limit the authority of police officers to use deadly force. In this regard, Pastor Renee Ward of the Vancouver Avenue Baptist Church has informed the Committee of Everyday People to draft Campbell's Law to be submitted to the 2011 Oregon Legislature by State Senator Chip Shields, who represents Northeast Portland. Aaron Campbell, a relative of Pastor Ward, died in police custody on January 29th. PPA President Scott Westerman conceded in the February 4th Oregonian, quote, "Basically, we shot an unarmed black guy running away from us," unquote. Pastor Ward personally conferred with Governor Ted Kulongoski to obtain his support as a positive final act of his 8-year career as governor. She expects to gather 1,000 supporters at the opening legislative session in January to lobby for the measure. Committee members also support a new chief of police, a new police commissioner, and a new district attorney who will serve the public rather than the police bureaucracy. As a Cop Watch editor wrote in this month's issue, number 50, quote, "Trunk's team clearly leads the juries around by the nose, and as the saying goes, could indict a ham sandwich if he wanted to," unquote.
Mr. Long, I gave you another 30 seconds, but can you wrap up?
Another issue to be resolved is to require all police officers to be residents of Portland. The Portland Office of Human Resources reported to me on April 29th that only 707 are currently on the police force, 538 of which are not residents of this city.
Mr. Long, by wrap up, I mean finish.
Pardon?
I need you to wrap up. I've now given you a minute more, so we appreciate your testimony very much, and it's always good to hear your point of view, and I'm glad you keep coming back. Thank you, sir. Can you please read the title for communications item number 603?
Request of Richard Elmeyer to address council regarding council's support for its single-payer resolution.
Welcome back, Mr. Elmeyer.
My name is Richard Elmeyer. I am a candidate for the North Portland House seat that testified on September 30th, 2009, in support of the Portland City Council's single-payer resolution. I return today to ask if the council believes that the Tooth Fairy will leave past single-payer legislation under their pillows. Perhaps you expect Tinkerbell to spread pixie dust over the Capitol and turn 90 naysayers into a chorus of believers in single-payer. There are 535 members of Congress and 90 members of the Oregon legislature. These are the only people in the United States that can bring a single-payer health care system to America and Oregon. Not a single member of Oregon's congressional delegation, nor candidate for those offices, nor a single member of Oregon's legislature, nor candidates for those offices, except for me, Richard Elmeyer, have campaigned in support of a single-payer health care solution to Oregon's moral and economic health care crisis. In the 7 months since the council passed the single-payer resolution, it has failed to give written instructions to its government relations team to lobby anyone at the state or federal level in support of single-payer. The Portland City Council has failed to contact the Lane and Multnomah County Commissions, who also passed single-payer resolutions, to devise a unified strategy to accomplish their similar goals. A letter to the North Pole will not get Santa to deliver a single-payer bill in each of your stockings next Christmas. A resolution of support for single payer means the removal of the for-profit health insurance industry as the foundation for delivery of health care to Oregonians. It means the repeal of the recently passed federal health insurance bill and the billion-dollar health care bill passed by the Oregon legislature in 2007. A resolution of support for single payer means political confrontation of the highest order. This is what you voted for, but this is not what you are delivering. Unlike the Portland City Council, when I tell the voters of North Portland that Richard Ellmeyer will fight for single payer, they know that I have already proven my commitment many times. My opponent, Tina Kotek, did not testify in support of this council's single payer resolution because she opposes single payer and did her best to prevent Oregonians who do support single payer, like me and presumably you, from participating in the health care debate. Single payer reform does not come from wishing upon a star. Politics is a contact sport. It is often a blood sport. If you are not prepared to bleed and draw blood, then take off your sparkling, clean, single payer uniforms and get off the field. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ellmeyer. You win the award for best metaphor so far this morning. Can you please read the title for item number 604?
Request of Ulisher Hardiman to address council to postpone a previous request and ask how council can be meaningfully addressed and communicated with.
Mr. Hardiman, welcome back.
Morning, Your Honor, Mayor.
Hope you're hanging in there.
You know, over a year ago now, came in here and met with you marvelous people about a matter of just acute racial profiling. We didn't get anywhere with that, but Mayor Adams, I don't know if you know or not, but I've defended you up and down every street and sidewalk and alley in this town. Just be basically on the coast. Well, how I met you, the several times I met you, although I didn't know exactly who you were. And I'm hoping that, as your words have been said, that things will come okay. I've contacted your people. They're looking into the situation, so we'll see what happens on that. But now I'm still trying to get an answer. How is the council effectively communicated with? So far, I haven't found an answer for that.
So your issues are related to transportation. And so as the commissioner in charge of transportation, and your issues are operational, your issues are tough. And so in our former government, your requests are handled by the transportation commissioner. They're not handled by the council as a whole, and that's why you've been working with my office and with my team at the Bureau of Transportation. It's why we've facilitated your conversations with Joying Portland, and that's the work, that's my responsibility as a public servant to you. As you know, you've been here before. It's a tough one.
Well, the procedure is grinding along there, so I'll play it out and trust and count on what you said. But lastly, I mean, at 64 years old, I discovered a chink, a big breach, a hole in my very existence. I've lived my entire life. You know, basically, well, just go back. Recently, an eminent man passed away. We're talking about Ted Kennedy. He passed all this marvelous legislation, but nobody knows it has no teeth in it. If you're not able to go off and hire some powerhouse attorney, you know, which I usually have not been able to do, these laws are just toothless. And today, that's what I seek to amend. I want to be able to amend some of these chinks and holes in my existence. I've got family and whatnot. And that's what I'm working on today, as my awareness has been rocked by the occurrences that happened here in Portland on this incident here. I guess it's time. People just do anything in your life whenever they want to. How can you do anything at all? But anyway, so thank you all for your patience and forbearance. See you next time.
See you, Mr. Thank Hardiman. You. Thank you. Can you please read the title for communications item number 605?
Request of Sandra Burns to address council regarding inhumane treatment to the homeless and mentally ill.
Ms. Burns, welcome to the City Council. You only need to give us your first and last name.
Sandra Burns. I'm really a chiropractic physician on the west side of town. That includes Burlingame,
Hillsdale, Multnomah, Garden Home, Barber Boulevard. I'm speaking on behalf of the Citizens for the Humane Treatment of the Homeless Mentally Ill. We understand that we are our brothers and sisters' keepers, and that although we have not walked in their shoes, we do have a responsibility to treat them humanely. The idea being presented is based on practical applications that have been effective in the past. The synopsis of the idea is this: when 911 is called and there is any indication that there is suicidal intent or a person out of control who cannot reason or listen or control himself or herself, send a fire truck from the fire department as well as the police. A triage would be conducted to determine the symptoms of the person warranted the use of the tool best used by the fire department. And what is that? Cold water. In addition, the person would immediately be cocooned, and that's wrapped into a shape with a sheet or a blanket and delivered to the nearest emergency room. And where does this idea come from? You may not remember because you're too young, but the mental hospitals used to use this all the time. The male nurses of the mental hospital know this technique. Now, the idea is based on science. It causes the sympathetic nervous system is out of control. You remember the sympathetic nervous system, the fight or flight sympathetic nervous system. Your eyes are wide, your muscles are tight, and you're ready to run. But these people who are in this condition do not hear commands, cannot hear your commands due to other voices that they may be hearing. When cold water is applied, what happens? Sympathetic nervous system is shut down, and the parasympathetic nervous system has a chance to calm the person down. Do you understand?
Yes.
Do you get that idea?
Yes.
So the procedural details that I've offered have to do with the firefighters that are known as lifesavers. They're strong, physically fit, and when a new procedure or scenario is presented to them, I know that they proceed to perfect that new scenario. I know because they treated neighborhood emergency teams. They taught us how to react, how to triage. I don't know if you remember that, but it was 10 or 15 years ago that they were very active in that. So the only thing the EMTs and the firefighters may not know is how to cocoon, which they would employ a nurse to teach them. So the discussion has to do with pros and cons, and obviously my 3 minutes is up. But
go ahead and quickly summarize. If you have a summation, if you want to quickly summarize that.
The use of this tool is an additional tool that the city can use to calm down people who are out of control, homeless, mentally ill.
Commissioner Fritz?
Thank you very much for your testimony. Thank you for caring about people with mental illness and their experiences in our community. Commissioner Saltzman and I are working on different approaches to dispatching from the 911 center, which I'm in charge of, to look at alternative mechanisms of taking care of people with mental health emergencies. I'm not sure that the cocooning technique is one of those. I worked in psychiatry for 26 years, and we don't use that anymore. But I certainly appreciate the intent of what you're suggesting that we do, and we're certainly looking at a lot of different options.
Thank you, Doctor. Appreciate it. Can you please read the title for Council Communications, item number 606?
Request of Raymond C. Caballero to address Council regarding issuing a resolution of disapproval to Arizona's anti-immigrant law.
Hi, welcome back. Glad you're here.
Mayor and commissioners, morning. You won't speak this morning, but I'm joined here by the chair of the Hispanic Commission, Jose Ibarra. I'm here to talk to you this morning about the importance that this council issue a very strongly worded resolution against the Arizona law, very anti-immigrant law. Not only anti-immigrant, anti-Latino, everybody knows that. I suggest a three-part resolution. The first part is to encourage Congress quickly
to enact comprehensive immigration reform. The second part, to roundly condemn the Arizona action. And the third, to do something more than issue what in effect is a glorified press release. They're already piling up. And the only thing apparently they would understand in Arizona is some tangible act, something showing them that this nation is not just going to follow along and allow them to enact Jim Crow laws today. Because that's what it was. That law is unconstitutional under the Supremacy Clause, area preempted by the Constitution, immigration. Also, it invites profiling of Latinos. Even Britt Hume, a conservative commentator, gave us a wonderful definition of profiling. Folks, he says, that's where we inconvenience a whole bunch of you so that we can check on a few. Of course, the people who are going to be inconvenienced would not be Britt Hume. And he's okay with that so long as he's not inconvenienced. The insult that Arizona has dished out to a good portion, 30% of its own population, is not something they just cooked up the last few months. Sheriff Joe Arpaio has been doing similar things for years. There's a culture in central Arizona that allows this to happen. In a very courageous act, the Phoenix Suns basketball team, situated in a town that has 65 to 70% approval for that law, its owner and the players have come out saying, we're against this law. That is really an incredible action by a team economically dependent on those fans. Immigrants don't cross this border for the weather, for the cuisine, to get on welfare. They cross to work to feed their families out of necessity. We have the right and the obligation to enforce our border laws, but not by throwing the Constitution out the window. That is so crazy to insist that we throw our Constitution out the window so that we can enforce border laws. I'll tell you that right across the border from Ciudad Juarez, now the most dangerous city in the world, is El Paso, Texas, who, by the way, the second safest city in the United States, a place Portland would love to have. San Diego across from Tijuana, same. Both of those cities this week enacted very strong resolutions with boycott language against Arizona. Those cities had every reason in the world to endorse Arizona and to get on that stampede of fear. They didn't. I ask you, really, to follow the Suns, follow El Paso, San Diego, and others, and resolve.
So first off, thank you for your excellent testimony and really well said. From the moment that soon after this law was enacted, we've been in communication with our attorneys to find out what was possible for us to do. When I read that other cities were contemplating boycotts, including contracts and such, and you noted here as well, I asked the city attorney what was legally possible. And you'll see that many of the cities have sort of recalibrated what they meant by boycott, because there are federal laws that prohibit sort of certain actions, like boycotting actual contracts between states. In the state of Oregon, our attorney has advised us that kind of actual boycotting of city contracts is not legal. But we can issue travel warnings and restrictions. The city council has already frozen travel because of budget reasons. But I do fear for the safety of any city employee that would, I shouldn't say safety, I do fear for the fair treatment of any city employee in Arizona. So we are looking at that. But in talking to my colleagues up here, all of which share your concerns. We also want to do something that is actually tangible, which is, I think, inferred in your comments as well. And so in my office's conversations with the mayor of Phoenix and the mayor of Tucson, which yesterday passed a ordinance authorizing a legal challenge by the city of Tucson to the law, I'm interested, in what we can do legally to help them. So I've been encouraging them in recent days to pursue that action. I'm interested in potentially the city of Portland. I will be proposing the city of Portland help in that legal pursuit of justice, as you've so clearly stated, for folks in Arizona. So we're working on the details of that, and that definitely will be forthcoming.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
And commissioners, thank you very much for your time.
Appreciate you. All right. That gets us to the consent agenda. I understand Commissioner Fish, you'd like to pull 625, is that right?
Stick around for 1 second. Do I want to pull it?
I was pulling it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I'd also like to pull 629.
625 and 629. Okay. Anybody else? All right. Sue, would you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
In the interest of time, I didn't put the item on the East Portland Action Plan on the regular agenda, but I do want to note, as passing the consent agenda, that we are continuing to put money into East Portland with these wonderful grants, and we'll bring a report on what we've done with them when they're completed. Aye.
Sam, Mayor Adams.
What was that? Sam, Nick Adams?
Mayor Adams.
Or Sue.
That would be aye. All right, can you please read the title for time certain, item number 607.
Accept report on Transportation Safety Summit.
If the first folks would come forward, and I'm going to make some introductory remarks first. As Transportation Commissioner, I have the important and incredibly necessary but difficult task to sit with those that have been injured on our transportation system or with the survivors of those who have been killed on our transportation system. I actually ran for city council to be the transportation commissioner, and nobody else wanted it at the time, in part because it was so severely underfunded, and it is the number one or number two source of complaints generated by citizens here to city government and city hall. But I took it on because of its importance to keep a city moving, to provide more equity of access around the city, and most importantly to me, to make it safer. Because the federal government and for a long time the state government did not increase the fees and the taxes associated with transportation, our system and systems of transportation across Oregon especially have been needlessly unsafe, killing and injuring unnecessarily hundreds of and thousands and tens of thousands in terms of injury, citizens of Oregon and residents of Portland. So one of the first things with this passion in mind, one of the first things I did is organize the city's first regular transportation safety summit. And its intent, hopefully, is pretty clear by its title. But it was to put together a work plan. It was intended to be part of making tough trade-off decisions about where we put our money. So I can tell the citizens of Portland that there are roads that are more bumpy because we have taken that money, what money we do have, and we have put it into improvements for life and safety. And I can tell citizens of Portland that if I seem at times overly aggressive about things like bike boulevards and curb extensions and the like, which are and speed bumps, which can be very controversial and unpopular, I do so without apology because they save lives and they reduce injuries. But this system has been so poorly funded, and the council, when they have had extra money, I just want to add on the local level, have put millions of dollars of general fund dollars into our local transportation system when they could have continued on with history, which was to not embrace the problem with local general fund resources. And yet, when they had the money, and even when they didn't, the city council has put money in to make this system more safe. And then after three sessions of lobbying the state legislature, we finally got an increase in vehicle taxes that will now begin to help us make it truly much more safe. But that is under possible referral to the voters. And if they get the signatures, we might or might not win that vote at a statewide level. In the meantime, I'm very honored to serve with a transportation bureau, with a police bureau, with an office of neighborhood involvement and other bureaus in the city, and some amazing grassroots nonprofit advocacy groups and for-profit businesses in doing what we can with the resources that we have to make this system safer. And part of the way we've continued to do that is with these transportation safety summits that have been very well attended. And so today I'm with all of our partners submitting to the City Council for their consideration a report on our efforts. And it'll also give a sense of our priorities moving forward. So with that, would you like to please start up, sir?
Good morning. I'm Captain Eric Hendricks, Portland Police Bureau Traffic Division.
Mark Clear, Portland Bureau of Transportation, Manages the Safety Program.
Mayor, thank you. And I would like to thank this council and past councils for their strong commitment here in the city of Portland for traffic safety. The Police Bureau, I guess you could say, we're on the front lines of traffic safety. We work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, as you know. And we're the ones that are first responders to traffic accidents on in the streets of the city of Portland. And we see firsthand the results of poor driving, unsafe driving, and certainly we see firsthand the results of an emphasis on traffic safety. And I think the emphasis on traffic safety, the proof is in the pudding. 2 years ago, we had the lowest number of fatalities we'd had here in Portland on our streets in recorded history, and I think we started keeping statistics on that in 1925. And to the Police Bureau, those of us who see it firsthand, that's certainly an encouraging thing to see out there on the streets every day. And we thank you for your commitment to that. Like you said, Mayor, on February 16th, we had our 2010 Transportation Safety Summit. We met with a large group of citizens, our community partners, which are numerous, and we started the summit with a safety update, talking about statistics, crashes, and an update on traffic safety. Like you said, Mayor, we started also with a discussion of House Bill 2001, the statewide gas tax funds, and we talked about our efforts through education, enforcement, and traffic engineering, our efforts to strengthen safety efforts around the city of Portland. Like you said, Mayor, you were there, and you chaired it. Sue Keel from the Bureau of Transportation, the director, she was there. Chief Sizer was there. Jason Tell, the Oregon Department of Transportation Region 1 manager, was there. Mr. Fred Hansen, the past TriMet general manager, and Erin Jansen, she's a deputy fire marshal for the Portland Fire Bureau. After the introductions, we broke down into seven separate groups. We had a traffic division officer assigned to each one of those groups, and those groups were comprised of our community partners, folks from the neighborhood associations, Willamette Pedestrian Coalition, Bicycle Transportation Alliance, other community groups, and talked about and listened to our citizens' issues regarding traffic safety, education, and engineering. In the city here, and we're proud from the Police Bureau that we've had some very, very strong partnerships over the years with the folks from the Bureau of Transportation. We work with them daily on those efforts. Folks from ODOT, we're beginning a partnership with ODOT here in the next few months. We're hoping to work on safety, truck safety in the Interstate 5 and 405 corridors here in Portland. We think that's an important partnership, and we're excited about that. We worked with the folks from Portland Public Schools. Like I said, very strong partnerships with the OSIF neighborhood involvement, businesses, obviously with TriMet, through the courts with our education efforts, the trauma nurses up in Emmanuel, the Bicycle Transportation Alliance, the Willamette Pedestrian Coalition, and our partners over in Metro.
Mark Gleer, manager of the safety program for PBOT. This next slide highlights some of the strategic investments that council has made over the last few years to really prioritize safety improvements. The biggest one, I think, from my tenure as managing the safety program has been the one-time general fund investments. We highlight here pedestrian islands on our highest crash corridors. Again, these improvements have shown over a 40% nationwide, a 40% decrease in pedestrian crashes at these kinds of locations. One-time funds also supported the Safe Routes to School programs, red light cameras, a number of specific services. In addition to that, we continually prioritize federal funds on high crash corridors to make improvements. Example would be the recent Sandy Boulevard project or the Burnside work. Also, the Safe Side and Green Street community effort, the 89-member stakeholder committee, really helped us dig deeper and prioritize some of our safety improvements. So you're seeing that through work that we've been doing over the since that effort. In addition to that, the PBOT BES Green Street partnership has allowed us to build projects like the Southeast Spokane Bicycle Boulevard project, but also just really has, I think, sharpened some of the focus between the agencies on everything that we're doing, both the PBOT side to see what we can make green that we may not have made green, and also on the BES side of saying, if you're doing a Green Street improvement, can it be tweaked in a way that would allow it to provide better safety benefits?
And how long has the Green Street program been going between Transportation and Environmental Services?
We've been partnering. It's been a multi-year effort. When the Green Street policy was being created, I actually served as one of the PBOT representatives on that committee. And starting a couple years ago, Bureau of Environmental Services created a couple hundred. A couple hundred thousand dollars of additional revenue that would go into that program. So it's definitely something that I think's getting better over time, but we have had the partnership for 3 years. This next slide highlights the how safety is improving for everyone. If you look at just Portland statistics, and that's what this top chart highlights, we're actually experiencing a 6 times faster reduction in fatalities than the rest of the country and a 3 times faster reduction than the rest of the state of Oregon. And as the mayor said, personally, I feel like that's probably, you know, the public outside the public sector has as much to do with a lot of those safety improvements than what we're doing inside the city. We're really fortunate to have, as you'll hear more about, community partners that have really helped us with this comprehensive approach to improving safety. Some of the highlights from a safety perspective, one is that there's a 75% reduction in motor vehicle crashes in the last 10 years. Again, making it safer for ped and bikes makes it safer for everyone. Last year was our lowest number of ped fatals, 5. This year, as we'll talk about a little bit more, we're having a bad year for pedestrian fatals. There's 8 pedestrian fatals already this year, and we'll talk a little bit more about some things we're doing about that. No bicycle fatalities in 4 of the last 10 years. So far this year, no bicycle fatalities. And then again, this one where I think the nonprofits, the Community Cycling Center, the Bicycle Transportation Alliance, Vermont Pedestrian Coalition have really helped, is this decrease in bicycle and pedestrian crashes for kids. The helmet law obviously was huge as a part of that as well. So this slide provides that in a little more detail, and we've actually updated this since the Safe Side and Green Street outreach. And what it shows is over 5 years, how many people died in traffic fatalities in the city of Portland, 235 in that 5-year period between 1994 to 1998, falling to 151 from 2004 to 2008. If you use the National Safety Council multipliers, and these are the more conservative ones, just on the actual economic costs, not the indirect economic costs, you can see that we reduced those costs to Portland over a 5-year period from almost $900 million to about $600 million. So it's a significant return on investment, not even considering the you know, emotional and personal toll of these crashes.
But just to juxtaposition these numbers in terms of how do we weigh this as a community priority against all the other challenges we face as a city. And it's a gruesome comparison, but it's one that I think sort of I intend to get people's attention with when I'm out in the community, is when you compare the five-year and five-year number of people that are murdered, let's say, to killed on our transportation system, it isn't even close in terms of the increased amount of carnage and death that happens as a result of an antiquated transportation system that has been starved of money for a very long time in terms of enforcement, in terms of engineering, and in terms of education. This remains a very, very, very difficult, but a very impactful problem for the city.
In addition to those points, which I agree with, is there's also some major challenges that we are facing that we haven't made as much progress on. And this slide highlights some of those. Motorcycle fatalities have increased significantly as registrations have gone up. 10 of the last 15 fatals have been single vehicle. We have this great program in Oregon, Team Oregon, that's a training for motorcycle riders. It's something we'd really like to enhance and make sure more people are participating in that program. Speed and DUI, especially DUI, continue to be major factors in crashes, and something that at the mayor's request and our Traffic Safety Coordination Council, we have a working group now that's county, city, working on that specific issue. In addition to that, as I mentioned before, the 2010 so far has been a horrific year for pedestrian crashes in the city of Portland. This slide talks a little bit about what we're doing to respond to those crashes. One of the double fatals at Southeast Foster and Southeast 80th, we've used rapid flash beacons, made an improvement there that we've gotten feedback and done an enforcement action that shows we're getting higher levels of compliance. In addition to that, in the 2010-2011 budget, we are programming or requesting funding for pedestrian improvements, $16 million for sidewalks, about $800,000 for crossing improvements. So it'll allow us to, in a way that we haven't been able to over the last decade, really address some of these safety concerns. Here's a slide. Sorry for that, it's hard to read. We can provide more detailed information to City Council, but highlights some of those completed projects with that same safety focus that we identified in the Safe Sound and Green Street efforts. Really like to highlight this slide that, you know, despite our efforts, we still do have way too many Portlanders being killed needlessly due to inadequate funding. And that's probably one of the most frustrating parts of this, is that we do have these plans that are all across the city of ways we can improve safety.
And I wish that Portlanders, and it just isn't humane or compassionate to do so, but I wish that I try to meet with as many of the parents, the survivors of folks that are killed on the system, and I wish we could. It's asking too much of those folks to be very public in their grief, but I wish more Portlanders would understand that these are real live at one time, you know, for some, for others, the survivors, real life folks who are just devastated by this loss. The police, you know, are the front lines of seeing this carnage, and it's really, really oftentimes unnecessary.
This slide highlights that allocation of safety funds from House Bill 2001, $16.8 million to pedestrian safety, $440,000 to Safe Routes to School, which is generally pedestrian and bike safety, $2 million for primarily focused on expansion of the bike boulevard system, and $500,000 focused on high crash corridors. So just quickly to give you a little sense of what we talked about at the Safety Summit on these issues, the pedestrian improvements, and you'll hear from Steph Routh with the Willamette Pedestrian Coalition in a minute, but we have a process set up where we're revisiting a lot of the prioritization that we've done in the past on sidewalk need and crossing needs based on crash history, cost benefit, development patterns, and need. And the short story is we need to do this quickly because we have 36% of the city under 18 and over 65 that are desperately in need of these of this infrastructure so that they can get to the store and get to transit. Here's a quick slide on the Bicycle Boulevard work that tries to highlight how much of a safety benefit our bicycle boulevards are creating. So, for example, on this slide, you can see crash history on 82nd Avenue. There's ped and bike crashes, obviously one of our high crash corridors. A pedestrian dies not just on average, but pretty much every year crossing 82nd Avenue. The bike boulevard, which is the green line on this map, which moves around 83rd, 84th, 85th, but provides that parallel connector, has very, very low crash history. So as we can provide this as an alternative for pedestrians, but more for bicyclists just because of the distances, it really ends up being a major safety improvement.
I want to just emphasize that because it's as well as the tragedy for the person who's killed and their family, it's also a tragedy for the driver if they were not.
Exactly.
So that's why bike boulevards, I think, are help everybody, whether you're a driver, a pedestrian, or a bicyclist, because they help provide safe routes for everybody.
Definitely. And even that, I would extend it even one step farther, which is not just the impact if you're in the crash, but just that day-to-day interaction. You know, we've heard so much from Portlanders, whether they're cyclists or drivers, that being uncomfortable on those busy streets because of that mixing of vehicles is something that we either need to invest in, cycle tracks or other things on the busy street, or the boulevards. And the short story is we can build these boulevards, especially with some of these partnerships that we've put together, for the same cost of doing one, you know, really expensive intersection improvement. This next slide gives an example of, again, the 13th in Spokane, of where we were able to do a green street improvement that allowed cars to come out off the lower volume street, but kept the cars coming off the busy street, 13th onto Spokane, is a great example of this type of work. And this next slide on bike boulevards, I think, again, which is a little bit of a secret to a lot of Portlanders, is that with these investments, we are dramatically transforming the city. If you look at the green lines on this map, that's about 29 miles of bike boulevards that existed in Portland as of last year. At the end of next fiscal year, our goal is to have completed all the yellow lines on this map with additional bike boulevards. So in a sense, over a two-year period, again, with council's support and investment, we'll have doubled the number of bicycle boulevards in the city of Portland. And even more importantly, we'll have really meaningful bike boulevard projects in East Portland. The 86th, 87th Boulevard paralleling 82nd, the Bush Project paralleling Powell, another very high crash volume crash corridor for us, and the 101st project that connects from the Springwater Trail up to that. I'll try to go a little bit faster here, but one of the examples, here's an example of that, the kinds of improvements that we'll be making with our BES partnership funding, and it gives you an example of a cycle track to help get ongoing to help get across 33rd. On high crash corridors.
But before we,
oh, sure.
I want to say that we get criticism from the right sometimes on this is a waste of money, and I hope that this helps to illustrate to folks the facts that we are saving money by saving lives and reducing injuries. Most recently, we had the criticism from what I would describe the left, including the notion, I think the quote was, that there's blood in the bike boulevards. And I just want to underscore that there is blood right now in unnecessarily spilled with deaths and injuries in the streets of Portland. And it will be bike boulevards and these improvements to transportation that will reduce that.
Probably the most positive thing that I've experienced in going out and doing the outreach on the current 7 miles of bicycle boulevards has been as we work through those conversations, and they haven't always started in a very pleasant place, have really ended up very positive based on the fact that the improvements we're doing are more than just bike improvements. People seem to get it that what we're creating is these nice parallel routes that you could walk your dog. In a lot of senses, they're a park-like experience. Volumes are 300 to 400 cars a day on a lot of these boulevards. And so that's been, you know, for me personally, that's been one of the nicest things, whether it's a project that we're doing in East Portland or in Southwest Portland or more inner Portland, people are getting that these improvements serve more than just one mode. The last thing that I'll talk about before we turn it over to part of the community presentation is what's happening in high crash corridors. And personally, I feel like this is an area where, thanks to the work of this council, but also ODOT and Jason Tell, which we'll talk about this in a little bit more, is that there's just a massive opportunity to elevate the services that we're providing and be smarter in doing that. Basically, what we're going to do is we're going to put together high crash corridor reports for our top 10 high crash corridors, and based on that, have a short-term and longer-term implementation strategy and really work with the community, the neighborhood businesses, and neighborhood associations to really make that a good product. I won't go through all the details, but it will allow us to, in a much more strategic way, based on crash history and using partnerships with the PSU transportation research groups up there, to really stretch our dollars as much as possible. With that, I will turn it over to the next group.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much. And the next group of folks will be our great partners at the Oregon Department of Transportation in Region 10, and also Shelley Lomax, the Executive Director of Operations for ODOT?
TriMet.
TriMet, sorry, for TriMet. I thought so. Welcome. And at the outset, I just want council and the viewers to know that when I talk to other mayors around the country, they often highlight the frustration and difficulty they have in coordinating with other transportation and transit providers. We don't have that problem here. We've got great partnerships with our local ODOT region and with TriMet.
Great. Thank you, Mayor and Councilors. Jason Tell, the ODOT Region 1 Manager located here in Portland. I'm very, very pleased to be here today, and I'm really going to focus on the partnership between ODOT, TriMet, and the City of Portland on safety, and in particular, making the transportation system safer for all users, so not just motorists, but also cyclists and pedestrians. Safety really is an issue that I think is the best issue that we partner on, at least between the city and ODOT. And I'm really going to talk about a couple examples of how that partnership is yielding positive results. So first of all, recently there was announced several grants where ODOT is providing funding to the city to improve safety. The first was a $500,000 grant to PBOT for safer routes to schools. So that will result in improvements at 7 local elementary schools. We also have awarded a $900,000 grant that's going to the city to help come up with plans to tame traffic in these high crash corridors, so what we just learned about. There's been several projects that have been implemented. Those are what I just talked about, some things that are going to happen, but I want to talk a little bit about some projects that are underway right now or have been completed. And these really have been great partnering efforts. The first, there's a slide showing 82nd Avenue. For anybody who knows that road and knows this particular location at Jonesmore, where you really have a mix of cars, pedestrians, transit users, really everybody using a very constrained space. And this is an example where we, all of us partners, looked at the situation and we didn't really wait for something bad to happen. In this particular case, I think we decided it was dangerous enough we wanted to do something before a serious tragedy took place. And so an 82nd Avenue Max platform working group was formed of government agency folks and neighborhood people, citizens, and many city bureaus were involved, ONI, Portland Police, PBOT, and like I mentioned, TriMet and ODOT as well. And this group worked for 5 long years using the crime prevention through environmental design model to prioritize improvements. And the result was a package of improvements in this area. And you'll see the results of this here, where it was a median treatment to help encourage pedestrians to use crosswalks, but it also involved reconfiguring the transit stops and providing a shelter and better crosswalks. So it really was a comprehensive approach looking at all users. And that work was completed in March. And as I said, I think it's a great example of government being proactive but also working well. There's a lot of different partners involved in order to make this project take place.
If I might just interrupt, I really like that shelter.
You really like what?
The shelter. The shelter
great.
Design
yep.
looks wonderful.
Good. Well, TriMet's here, and you can thank them for that design. also, on 82nd, as part of the High Crash Corridor Safety Action Plan, new pedestrian median islands were installed throughout the corridor, and one that involved a more innovative strategy was at 82nd and Francis, and that's where a rapid flash beacon was installed, which has strobe lights that really capture drivers' attention and let them know that they're entering an area where pedestrians are crossing. The next project, which is underway right now, is on Powell Boulevard. And we're installing new crosswalks as part of a paving project. They're being located in stretches where there's 10 blocks, really, today before you can get to a safe crossing. So the new crossings will improve safety for pedestrians. Sidewalks right now are being installed as we speak to bring them up to ADA standard as well. So it's not just the crossings. So I've talked about several specific projects. I wanted to mention a broader issue that's underway and one that I'm really excited about. At JPAC this year, where the region's long-range transportation plan is put together, I offered an amendment to say that we in the region should be creating a regional traffic safety plan to further coordinate our efforts, and I'm very happy that that got incorporated into the long-range plan. And so what that means is we're going to elevate safety as an issue, not just within the city, but regionally. And I think it'll bring people to the table to further do the kind of work that we just talked about here between ODOT and the city and TriMet, but do it on a much bigger scale and involve more partners and look ahead into the future. And our goal, just to be very, very clear, is to the result we're looking for is a net reduction in these accidents. I mean, we really want this to make impact. And that's for cyclists, pedestrians, and for motorists. So I want to thank the city, TriMet, all these partners I mentioned. I'm very happy at the progress we've made so far, and I'm very excited about the work we have to do. And I really do need to mention Mayor Adams, his leadership on this issue, and Sue Keel and the folks at PBOT are top-notch. Pleasure to work with. Last reminder I wanted to leave with is at ODOT in our headquarters in Salem. Last week, we unfortunately had to add names to the Fallen Worker Memorial. And we're entering into the construction season this summer, and I just want to encourage everybody who might be watching and listening to be very, very careful out there. There are a lot of workers that will be in the roadway working, and I encourage everyone to slow down and pay attention. So with that, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jason. And we've had a number of regional directors, and you're by far the most responsive and the most partnered with our folks. They laud you and your team's efforts every day, so thank you.
Good morning. I'm Shelley Lomax with TriMet, and you've heard a lot about partnerships, and I just want to echo how important we feel those partnerships are. All of us have compressed budgets, and what we've found is that by partnering with the other jurisdictions and those who have a stake in safety, we really are able to make the most of our limited resources and get the best product. Rider safety is the number one concern for us, and what we realize at TriMet is that everyone who boards our system has to get there either on foot or by bike. I mean, yes, you can park your car at a park and ride, but ultimately you have to walk to the platform. So it's very important that we allow safe access to transit. The partnership at 82nd and Jonesmore is a great example. You heard Jason talk about that. We were able to work together, move a bus stop, really help to reconfigure things there. The illumination project at 82nd is another great example of that partnership. We also know that we have to share the road, and a great example of that is the work that was done at the Portland Transit Mall. We really reached out to PBOT and to ODOT to look for ways to make that work, and knock on wood, it's been very successful, but it's a great example of around the nation where people were wondering, how are you going to pull that off? And now other transit agencies come, they look at it, and they really recognize how with good partnerships, transportation can integrate well into the cityscape, and we can all share the road. Rose Quarter improvements, that's another great great area of improvement where we added in the bike boxes and the bike lane. And what we've heard from our partners that we've worked with at the BTA is this has been a great, great innovative change there at the city for the city, and it's really made things safer for those bicyclists in our community. So we look forward to doing more of this type of work. We look forward to the continued partnerships, and really want to thank Mayor Adams for putting together the Safety Summit. It was so exciting to see how the participation has grown over the years. Really, it was a very full house, and I don't think it was just for the gelato.
or to see me.
I might have been to see you.
No, I don't.
But circulating through the groups and the synergy and knowing that the community that was participating, they really recognized that what they were saying was being heard, and you could feel the buy-in, and that really is a testimony to the work that's being done by Mayor Adams and those who put together the summit. So thank you for letting us participate, and we look forward to ongoing partnerships.
We recently, as a community, suffered a terrible tragedy involving pedestrians and a bus, and I know that you and your agency joined me in a moment of, and all of you in a moment of silence for that just horrific tragedy. Thank you. Thank you very much. Next, we'll hear from Garrick Cranksley. Come on, Garrick. Sorry, I always mangle your name. And Stephanie Routh, director of the Willamette Pedestrian Coalition. Garrick is with...